Hello, welcome back to American Horror Stories. I'm your host, Lily Comadina, and today we're diving into the twists and turns of the bowels of American Horror Story Season 1, Murder House. This season is defined as the show that changed the murder genre. So this is a trigger warning for the episode. There is mentions of gun violence, school shootings, abortion, murder, and rape. So the story starts off in 1922 when the murder house is built by Dr. Charles Montgomery, and his wife Nora and his son Thaddeus all move in. Long story short, Thaddeus dies, gets mailed back to Nora and Charles in pieces, then blah blah blah, Frankenstein baby. So the result of Dr. Charles Montgomery had a Frankenstein complex. So if you haven't, you know, Frankenstein's monster, blah blah blah. So he stitched the pieces of the baby back together. Kind of dark, yeah. So undead baby likes blood and flesh instead of milk. So Nora kills him because, zombie baby. So in a maniacal state, Nora shoots Charles, then herself, killing both of them. So jump forward, 1947. The Black Dahlia stops by the murder house to get an abortion from Dr. David Curran. He knocks her out with some kind of gas, then has sex with her while she's unconscious. Icky. He leaves the mask on for too long, and she dies. The ghost of Charles Montgomery then confronts the doctor and claims he will make the body more portable. So it cuts her up, dumps her in a shrub, and leaves. And he said, I believe, she has such a pretty face, or like she has such a pretty smile or something, so he cut the Glasgow smile into her, which if you didn't know is like the slits on the face that like makes you permanently smile, like bleh, or so that's where that came from. And in this season, that's the story of the Black Dahlia. So okay, jump forward again, 1968. The current inhabitants are two college students, Gladys and Maria. So R. Franklin stops by and claims to be hurt, and while Maria is helping him, she realizes he's not hurt and confronts him, so he kills both of them, drowning Gladys in a bathtub, and forces Maria into a nurse's costume, ties her up, and then Zodiacs her. If you don't know what I mean by that, he hogtied her and then stabbed her in the back, so yeah. So the bathtub drowning later comes into play in the show, but I'll get back to that later. So in 1978, twins Troy and Byron visit the abandoned murder house, and they find a young girl who is later revealed as Adelaide, who is warning them, you're gonna die in there. She says those words. She keeps repeating it. So they don't heed her warning. They are lured into the basement and then killed by the infantata, who is Thaddeus. Yeah, Frankenstein, baby. So, in 1983, Adelaide's mother, Constance Langdon, discovers her husband, Hugo, is cheating on her with their maid, Moira, and she kills both of them. She shoots Moira directly in the eye, and so this comes into play later. So, she buried Moira in the yard of the murder house, which is the house, you know, and fed Hugo to the dogs that she cares for in her doggy daycare business. So a year later, Constance and Adelaide are still living there. We learn that there's a son that Constance has named Tate. So at this point, he's about 7 years old. So he meets the infantata, again, Thaddeus, in the basement. And the ghost of Nora teaches him the go-away method, which entails the victim screaming go away at the victim, like it's having a temper tantrum. Or no, sorry, the victim screaming go away at the ghost, and then it leaves. So the method is introduced later to another character, but again, get back to that later. So, sometime between 1985 and 1993, Constance and her two children move in next door after losing their home. So, shortly after this, whenever that was, a man named Larry moves into the murder house with his wife and two kids. He ends up having an affair with Constance, and so she demands he moves the wife and kids away so they can be together. But Larry refuses, so when they're all sleeping, Constance lights the house on fire, killing everyone except Larry. And somehow, for some reason, he stayed with her. Don't know why, but he did. So, 1994, Constance, Larry, Adelaide, Tate, and Larry and Constance's new son, who is deformed, his name is Bo. So they all move back into the murder house. So Larry is forced by Constance to kill Bo, which, reluctantly, he does. His own son. Yeah, there's some thoughts there. So Tate is now 17-ish, and he's enrolled in Westfield High School. He suffers a mental break somewhere along the line, goes to the office where Larry works, dumps gasoline on him, and sets him on fire. He is left with severe burns on 70% of his body. After this, he goes to school, shoots and kills 15 students on Halloween. He is then killed in his room by a SWAT team the evening of the shooting. Keep in mind, his mother had no idea about this until the SWAT team informed her after her son was killed. So, where was I? So, in 2010, so 15, 20-ish years after, a couple of Chad and Patrick move into the murder house seeking a fresh start. Their plans don't go accordingly, and Patrick starts seeing other men. So, okay, pause. I need to explain the story and the backstory of The Rubber Man. So The Rubber Man originates in season 1, Murder House, but makes a reappearance in season 8, Apocalypse. So in season 1, anyways, The Rubber Man is Tate. And so when Chad and Patrick were trying to revive their relationship, things got a little kinky for a moment, and Chad bought a gimp suit, which is made out of latex, hence Rubber Man. So Patrick tried to throw out the suit, but Tate, the ghost of Tate, you know, found it and killed them, both on the Halloween of 2010. So the year following, the Harmons move in. So the Harmons are, they're the main people that the season follows. Another thing to mention, okay, this is really important. So if you die in the house or on the property of the house, your ghost or like your consciousness, your being is trapped there forever. So that's why Tate was able to kill, you know, everyone. Vivian and Ben Harmon, who are the parents, their teenage daughter Violet falls in love with Tate's ghost without knowing he's a ghost and is just known as Ben's patient. So Ben's a therapist, that's something worth mentioning. Or he's a psychologist, something like that. And he has a home office. So Violet dies of an overdose despite Tate's desperate attempts to save her. So we think that she survived, but it's later revealed that she actually died, and there's this beautiful bathtub scene. It was so sad. I was sobbing my eyes out when I realized that she was dead. So Ben gets hung by the ghost of his mistress Hayden, who is a bit of a sour apple. That's the nicest way I know how to put it. But she basically, Ben had an affair with her in Chicago, or no, sorry, not Chicago, Boston. And he was like, Vivian was like, oh my gosh, you're cheating on me. He was like, no, I'm not. But he definitely was. We all know he was. And so they moved to the place to get a fresh start. And he like went to Boston again, and they met up again, and he had more affairs. And then she shows up at the house. She's like, I'm pregnant. She wasn't pregnant. She's a psychotic, crazy person. So anyways, I don't know. I don't really remember how. Oh yeah, Larry kills her with a shovel, buries her in the backyard. Big mistake. So now she's there forever. So she killed Ben. And Vivian dies in childbirth. Okay, this part, a little bit weird. So Vivian had something called, what's it called? Oh, I googled it, I'm back. That term is called superfecundation. Yeah, mouthful. So basically it's when you're pregnant with two different men's babies. But it has to be in the same ovulation period. So it would have to be within the same 48-hour period, which is, you know, a little bit risque. Okay, Vivian dies in childbirth. Okay, so now I'm going to get into the actual backstory of the season. So season 1, Murder House. It is based off of the massacre of Richard Speck in 1966. So basically what happened was Richard Speck was born in the town of Monmouth, Illinois, in a religious family in 1941. So that makes him 25 when he committed the massacre. So when Richard was 6, his 53-year-old father suffered a heart attack and died. So childhood trauma events are very common in serial killers. So Speck and his family bounced around in the East a little bit, mostly in poverty, and he was definitely, you know, on the poverty line or below. So when he reached middle school age, he refused to wear the prescription glasses he needed to see, He wouldn't speak in class due to his anxiety. So that also could have been selective mutism, which, you know, is very common, actually, but, you know, just seems kind of odd that all that happened at the same time. Anyways, he repeated the eighth grade after failing and then dropped out his first year of high school. So he picked up his stepfather's drinking problem and impregnated a 15-year-old girl he met at a fair. I'm not sure how old he was, probably high school age. Still 15, you know, probably legal. So he would be arrested 41 times by the time he was 24. He had a wife, surprisingly, after all of his events. So he forced his wife at knife point to have sex with him 4 to 5 times a day. So red flag, people, red flag. If someone forces a knife on you and then forces you to canoodle, red flag, you should leave. Just, like, I'm not sure why I have to say that, but apparently I do. So, after an incident with a carving knife and a woman, Speck's wife filed for divorce and received full custody of their child, which they had, which I did not know about. So things really started to escalate and go downhill after that. He burgled, tortured, and raped a 65-year-old woman, then killed a 32-year-old barmaid. So when he was being questioned for the murder of the barmaid, he left Monmouth and fled to Chicago to live with one of his sisters. So July of that year, 1966, so he was 25, he went on a drinking binge and committed his most heinous crime. So this is when the massacre occurred. So this is a big trigger warning to the violence that's going to occur that I'm going to talk about. So beware with that. So he lured, he didn't. So I just had to pull up a website because I couldn't remember anything. So while he was on his drinking binge, Speck met a woman named Ella Mae Hooper. She was a 53-year-old woman who he had met at the bars and taverns he was drinking at. He held her at knife point, lured her back to his room, he raped her, and stole her mail-order 22 caliber ROM pistol. So that's a pistol with a lot of action in it, you know? So Speck set out to the streets of Southside Chicago, which, you know, after about a mile, he came across a house, like a townhouse complex thing that was functioning as a dormitory for student nurses at South Chicago Community Hospital. So 5 of them were there. They lived there. So unfortunately, 8 of them were killed. So their names were Gloria Jean Davy, 22, Marianne Jordan, 20, Suzanne Ferris, 21, Valentina Paison, 23, Patricia Matusek, 20, Merlita Gargulo, 23, Pamela Wilkening, 20, and Nina Schmail, 24. All of them were slain in July 1966 by Richard Speck. So a very unfortunate incident, and this is where it referenced the nurse costume in American Horror Story. So he, somewhere along the line, had developed a hatred for nurses, and so that's where he kind of fit in, I guess. So obviously a very unfortunate event and something that never should have happened in the first place. But so in the season, Murder House, you know, in the show, Richard Speck was, what was his name? I think it was R. Franklin. So his name is R. Franklin in the show. And because I guess they didn't want to use his actual name, too sensitive. I get it, you know? So he stopped by the house with, like, hey guys, I'm hurt. And he wasn't. He really wasn't. Nope. He, you know, as I said before, throws Gladys in the bathtub upstairs, drowns her, and hogties Maria and kills her. So this also kind of is a reference to later in the show when Violet and Vivian are home alone. They're home together alone, and Ben is, I think, in Boston having an affair with Hayden. So, you know, priorities. And a cult, I think, or like a cult people they like worship this dude, R. Franklin, who's really Richard Speck. But like, so they break in. Oh, R. Franklin was his middle name. Franklin was Richard Speck's middle name, I'm pretty sure. So that's kind of funky how they did that. Anyways, so the cult people, they broke in and they were like, we got to recreate this. So they threw, they were going to bring Vivian up to the bathroom, I think. Yeah, they were going to bring Vivian up to the bathroom. But first and they actually kept the real bathtub that Gladys was drowned in, and it was in the basement. So they were like, got to bring it up, you know. And I'm pretty sure Vivian killed one of them. Anyways, Queen. And Violet was like, he was like, put the maid outfit on. And she's like, turn around. And he was like, no. And she was like, oh, fine. So she put it on. And then, but I'm pretty sure Vivian was like, not on my watch. And she like chopped his head off or something. I don't know. So, you know, that happened. So, okay. Richard Speck. He did the massacre, the pew pew, you know. Oh my god, that was so insensitive. I'm sorry. But he did the massacre. And then, so, he was recognized after he went to a hospital a few days later, and a doctor noticed his tattoo after reading about it in a newspaper. So, apparently, there was another woman who was there who he didn't notice, or, like, he got away from her or something, but she rolled under a bed and hid there until 6 a.m. You know? Good measures. So, Speck was placed on trial for the murders after a panel of psychiatrists, chosen by both his defense and his prosecution, judged him competent to do so. So he wasn't clinically insane, he was held accountable. So his trial began on April 3rd, 1967, and Speck claimed to have no recollection of the murders, something that did not bother the prosecution, as they already had an eyewitness ready to identify him, you know, like, you did it, shut up, no one's calling your, like, we're not just gonna let you go, like, come on. So the survivor took the witness stand and was like, him, this is the man. And that was like an iconic scene, I guess. I don't know. Not a scene, it actually happened. Never mind. But they also found fingerprints, so like, you know, he's kind of screwed. So many people saw it at the end of an era of innocence, you know, like the 60s love, you know. But then like 2 years later, Charles Manson, boom. Like a little bit of a truth bomb there. So after only 45 minutes of deliberation, the jury came back with a guilty verdict for Speck. Obviously, we're not just gonna like let you go. So he was initially given a death sentence, but this was reduced to life in prison in 1971 because the Supreme Court ruled that people opposed to the death penalty were unconstitutionally excluded from the jury. So Speck served a sentence at Stateville Correctional Center in Illinois, hometown, baby. So he got caught with drugs and moonshine. He got the nickname Birdman because he kept a pair of sparrows that had flown into his cell. Really creepy. Okay, so he died on December 5th, 1991, the eve of his 50th birthday from a heart attack. So obviously his father's genes, or his, you know, the apple didn't fall far from the tree, except his dad wasn't a raging serial killer, you know? Haha! So anyways, that was one of the true crime aspects of the show. But there were a couple others, which I'm going to get into right now. So the place that Murder House was filmed in was built in 1908 by Alfred Rosenheim, and is known as the Rosenheim Mansion. It is said to be haunted, but obviously not to the extent of the show. So, as I briefly talked about before, the writers incorporated the story of the Black Dahlia into the storyline. So in the show, Elizabeth Short went to Dr. David Curran for an abortion. He then violated her while she was unconscious and accidentally killed her. The ghost of Charles Montgomery said he could make the body more portable, so he bisected and mutilated her face to make it look like she was smiling. So the way he did that, he performed like a Glasgow smile. So that was it originated from Scotland in the 20th century. And so what they would do is, it was usually done with a utility knife or a piece of broken glass. So they would cut from the corner of the mouth all the way up to the ear to make it look like the victim was like broadly smiling, which is horrible, but you know, stuff happened in the 1900s. So to this day, the Black Dahlia murder was never solved. So that's kind of really cool how the writers kind of made that snake its way in there, even though it's so, utterly insane. But so Murder House was also loosely inspired by the Amityville House, which is also the start of the Amityville horror. So the story there is in 1974, 23-year-old Ronald DeFeo killed his entire family with a shotgun. So that, I think it was like his two sisters, or like his two siblings, his mother and his father. So he was like a brother. So he killed his entire family with a shotgun. And when he was interviewed, he claimed that the house made him do it. So he said that there was like voices and stuff, and he said there was voices that were telling him to do it. He said, catch him and kill him. So he obviously sounded insane or like schizophrenic. So they had a doctor perform a psychiatric evaluation on him. And it came up clean. He didn't see any signs of schizophrenia or any other mental illnesses that could have effects like that. So that's, seems kind of reasonable. And he also talked about something called the Red Room, which is a room that was built in the house, that got boarded up by like cinder blocks, like it was concrete. So he broke it down and then went in there, and there was like a statue in there and everything. And he was like, it was the Red Room made me do it. And they're like, that's not true. But then they went to the house and it was there, so it was true. But anyways, kind of crazy. So the house, the Amityville Horror House, was built by Dr. George Hodel, and after he died, his son Steve Hodel found a picture of a dark brunette who he was convinced the black was the Black Dahlia. So kind of insane, right? Like she was really everywhere. Like she really was. Like she was apparently here at the Amityville House, and then she was seen at the Cecil Hotel. Like really soon before she was found and murdered. It's just like so many coincidences, and it just seems a little bit insane to think it's all a coincidence, right? So the writers really hit a gold mine with this season. It was written so beautifully, and there's so many different stories were incorporated into it, and it was just, oh, it was gorgeous. So that was the first season of American Horror Story I watched, and it was so good. It's what got me hooked, right? Like, I wanted to see these doctors again. I wanted to see these people again. I wanted to see these storylines again. And I didn't realize that any of it was true until, like I knew they used real names and stuff. And oh, another thing. This one's actually really sad. So when Tate Langdon shot up his high school, that's actually inspired by the Columbia shootings, I believe. So that's really sad. But like I didn't know that there was so much history there. Like I didn't know that, like I knew they used real names, right? Like the Black Dahlia and stuff like that, but I didn't know that like some of the stuff was actually true and it happened. So I just think that the writers did a really great job with that, and yeah, that's kind of it. So I hope you had a good time listening to today's episode. And so next time, we're going to be talking about season two, Asylum. Great season. Definitely one of my favorites. Real story there as well. So I really hope you stick around to find out. All right, see you next time, guys. Bye.